20 years ago, if you were watching TV in America, you were probably a Seinfeld viewer. The show about a group of New York friends aired on NBC from 1989 to 1998. It became the number one show in America and now airs all around the world in syndication. It was created by Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David and was groundbreaking in more ways than you might think. Jennifer Cation Armstrong has a new book about it called Seinfeldia, How a Show About Nothing Changed Everything. She joins us. And Jennifer, I want to start with an episode that came pretty early on and caused some controversy. It centers around all the characters waiting at a Chinese restaurant. Here's a clip where George Costanza, played by Jason Alexander, is upset because he's been waiting to use the phone and someone cuts in front of him.
You know, we're living in a society. We're supposed to act in a civilized way. Does she care? No. Does anyone ever display the slightest sensitivity over the problems of a fellow individual? No. No. A resounding no.
Hey, sorry I took so long.
Oh, that's okay, really. Don't worry.
Now, why was this episode at the Chinese restaurant so groundbreaking?
I want to say I feel like that was such a great clip because it's like the thesis of the whole show. This was a particularly groundbreaking episode because nothing happens. I mean, essentially, like by TV sitcom standards at that time, nothing happens. The plot is, you know, the log line is they go to a Chinese restaurant, they wait for a table, they don't get it, they leave. That doesn't sound like a story to network executives. So this was the one time when the network executives kind of really said, no, we don't think you can do this. And Larry David put up a fight enough and they let him go with it. And it turned out to be a huge turning point for the show because critics got it. Critics understood that it was funny because there was no actual plot. And a bunch of things happened, like that phone thing. And Elaine goes to try to steal an egg roll off someone's plate who's sitting there, which we've all sort of wanted to do while waiting at a restaurant. I often stare at people, you know, glower at them angrily to try to get them to leave or sooner. So there's a lot that goes on. And this, to me, kind of embodies when they said later, they kind of made the joke that really stuck, that they were a show about nothing. To me, this is the nothing. It's they made something out of nothing.
They also, you point out in this book that one of Larry David's lines about this show was, no hugging, no learning.
Exactly. And this is the key to the show, to a large extent, is that that's what made it so different, too. No character development. It's not like they got to the end and they had all changed and grown and matured. This was stripping down the sitcom form to purely be funny. And that's it. And that's a bold move because you have to be very funny then.
And when you watch it today, and it is on, and you've pointed out in this book that they've made billions of dollars since the show went off the air on syndication and other ways that people watch Seinfeld. When you watch it today, it's hard to tell what's a later episode and what's an earlier episode because, as you say, the characters don't really change that much. But also, it makes sense today almost as if it were being done right now, except for, you know, some of the technology is different.
Exactly. This is why it tends to live on, I think, is that it's still about these everyday irritations, right? That's what this show is about. And guess what we haven't figured out how to do? Get rid of everyday irritations. It doesn't matter how much technology we have. We're still having to sort of deal with each other. Like, what are our obligations to each other? And why do I have to do this and not that? And why do I have to be mad at this person and not this person? You know, that sort of thing.
One of the characters that is known so well by people who have watched this show is the soup Nazi, who's based on a real person in New York. Here he is in a scene with Jerry Seinfeld and Jason Alexander.
I didn't get any bread.
Just forget it. Let it go.
Excuse me, I think you forgot my bread.
Bread, $2 extra.
$2, but everyone in front of me got free bread.
You want bread?
Yes, please.
$3!
What?
No soup for you!
And the cashier grabs the soup. You can hear it there. But this tiny part in Seinfeld, played by Larry Thomas, has ended up changing his life completely, and now he's still making money on Seinfeld, on being the soup Nazi.
he very good-naturedly continues to play the soup Nazi at events. People will pay him, fly him out. He goes to conventions. He signs soup ladles. as you can imagine, most of his time is spent saying no soup for you to people, and they get a real big kick out of that. He has to keep his mustache because, you know, he still has to play the soup Nazi. And it's just fascinating because this was one episode. People often think it was more. Technically, he was also on the finale, but everyone was on the finale. You know, so this is one character part that this guy probably thought, oh, I'll just do this thing and forget about it. And here he is 20 years later, still playing the soup Nazi. I'm sort of fascinated by the fact that Seinfeld seems like it's taken over his life a lot more than, say, Jerry Seinfeld's at this point.
I want to talk to you briefly about some of the controversy that this show has had over the years. Here is an early controversy where they went to the mall in the suburbs and discussed parking in a handicap spot. Here it is.
What if a handicapped person needs it?
Oh, come on. They don't drive.
Yes, they do.
Have you ever seen a handicapped person pull into a space and park?
Well, the space is there. They must drive.
No, they don't. If they could drive, they wouldn't be handicapped.
So, if you can drive, you're not handicapped.
We're not going to be that long anyway. We got to get to the party.
Hey, I got news for you. Handicapped people, they don't even want to park there. They want to be treated just like everybody else. That's why those spaces are always empty.
He's right. It's the same thing with the feminists. You know, they want everything to be equal, everything. But when the check comes, where are they?
So this did not go over well with the network.
Yeah, that's – I'm sitting here cracking up. That's actually one of my most favorite, and it feels oddly relevant even today or especially today. But yeah, the network always kind of ended up letting them do what they wanted to, which is pretty incredible and obviously lends – itself, you know, this is why the show is still talked about. I think that if they had softened a lot of this, it would not still be something we'd be talking about.
Why did they get rid of the writers after every season? They almost all of the writers were fired at the end of every season.
Yeah, they usually hired a new batch. Mostly, you know, there were a couple of mainstays like Peter Melman and Larry Charles, but. Most of them came in as stand-ups. They didn't have a lot of or any TV writing experience. They would sort of come in and almost like use up their experiences that could be used as storylines for the show. And then they went on their way, usually to great profit and better success because they had been on Seinfeld. So it wasn't all bad. And at least the ones that I talked to weren't particularly bitter about this. But it did seem like they were almost like an idea farm more than anything else.
And when you look at the two people who were really behind this show, Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld, and Larry David left at a certain point after the seventh season, although he did come back to do that finale that everyone hated. but when you look at those two and you look at what Larry David has done since and Curb Your Enthusiasm, which has a similar feel to it in that, you know, they bring in a guest character who does something atrocious to one of the characters who responds in an even more atrocious way and then gets blamed for it. Who was the real brains behind Seinfeld?
Well, you know, as I said, this was Jerry Seinfeld's show and obviously a name it was. But Larry David was really kind of the spark, it seems like, that ignited the whole thing, you know, and made it what it was. It was really the combination of them. I think they're kind of a Lennon and McCartney thing. You know, I think they balance each other really nicely, and especially for network television at that time, there's no way Larry David's sensibility by itself gets on the air. You know, and notice no one was knocking on his door to ask for a show. It was Jerry who brought him in. And I think that Jerry's kind of more affability, you know, mellowed out the Larry David existential dark edge that he brought too. But I think the two together are what makes it so special. I mean, I love Curb as well, and that's all Larry David all the time. But that's a different time and on HBO, so it works a little better.
What do you think Seinfeld's effect on New York City was? People have talked about this show making New York feel like a friendlier, more fun city to live in, and it coincided with the city turning around in the 90s.
That and Friends, I think, really, and then Sex and the City kind of brought up the tail end of that. But I do know people who moved to the city because of all of those shows. I do think that as somebody who grew up in the Midwest – and moved to New York, it made it a little more accessible to me. Like, oh, I could do that.
And what about Seinfeld's impact on other television shows? How did it change TV? You say in this book it changed everything.
Well, it is a catchy subtitle, isn't it?
It is.
But it changed a lot in television because, to me, it kind of ushered in what we're now calling the golden age of television, you know, and the way we watch TV is so different. We obsess over it. We think it's smart. We're proud of watching TV. We don't claim to not have a TV anymore to sound cool. And this show elevated the form. It made sitcoms smart. And it also brought in the age of the anti-hero, in my opinion. I think it kind of greased the wheels for people to accept heroes on their television shows who are not necessarily great people and admirable people. I really do believe that people could accept Tony Soprano because they had already accepted these four who were not necessarily mafia killers, but, you know, also not necessarily paragons of humanity.
That's Jennifer Cation Armstrong, whose book is called Seinfeldia, How a Show About Nothing Changed Everything. Jennifer, I'm a huge fan of Seinfeld, and I was a big fan of this book. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.